Well, good morning. It's good to see everyone. I hope, if you don't mind, I'm going to do both things from down here this morning. And I thought I would just sit the whole time because I would be too short up there, and I'm basically too short here. It's the Nicodemus syndrome, and just have to deal with it. So anyway, but this morning, I'd like for us to look at 1 Chronicles, the 28th chapter. And to start with, I'm going to read verse 8 and 9 for the setting of our talk. Verse 8 and 9 of 1 Chronicles 28. So now, in the sight of all Israel, this is David talking. I'm sorry, David is talking to everyone. He's about ready to turn over the throne to Solomon. So now, in the sight of all Israel, the assembly of the Lord, and in the hearing of our God, observe and seek after all the commandments of the Lord your God, so that you may possess the good land and bequeath it to your sons after you forever. As for you, my son Solomon, know the God of your father and serve him with a whole heart and a willing mind. For the Lord searches all hearts and understands every intent of the thoughts. If you seek him, he will let you find him, but if you forsake him, he will reject you forever. We continue this morning our series of farewell speeches from different key biblical characters. And the one that I have is of David, as he shares some parting words as the king. He lives for some time after this, but not like Jacob, who was kind of on his deathbed. But he's about to turn over the throne to Solomon, and to give Solomon the blueprints of the temple that he had wanted to build. The text that I have, we have two chapters, chapter 28 and 29, that covers this. And I read those two chapters several times. And there are a lot of interesting things that you could pull out and talk about in those two, but to try to narrow it down, I mean, we could have talked about how much money a good motivational speaker can make in a very short time, and if we look at what was given after David got done talking, I mean, Bill Clinton couldn't even begin to match what he was able to do. A tremendous amount of inpouring of wealth from the people. We could talk about the thousands of animals that were sacrificed to celebrate the building project and everything. But, you know, today we go out and we line up four or five CEOs and give them a shovel and they turn the dirt over for a new building project. And here they sacrificed 3,000 bulls, rams, and lambs. And you just even think about how the Jewish religion would survive in today's social and political atmosphere. And even in their regular sacrifices. There's some commentary there, maybe. But the things that I really wanted to talk about this morning were not the things of the event so much as it was some of David's words that he spoke. Three areas in particular of his speech. Chapter 28, 1 through 8, we'll look at that, where I think there's an evident desire on David's part for a smooth and peaceful transition in leadership for the nation. Then in chapter 29, 14 through 16, where we find David's acknowledgement of God's fullness and our emptiness, how powerful and all filling that God is, and how little we bring to the table. And then the last part, chapter 29, 17 through 20, I want us to look at David's prayer to God on the behalf of others. So let's begin with the first eight verses in Chronicles 28. Now David assembled at Jerusalem all of the officials of Israel, the princes of the tribes, and the commanders of the divisions that served the king, and the commanders of thousands, and the commanders of hundreds, and the overseers of all the property and livestock belonging to the king and his sons, with the officials and the mighty men, even all the valiant men. Then King David rose to his feet and said, "Listen to me, my brethren and my people. I had intended to build a permanent home for the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord and for the footstool of our God. So I had made preparations to build it. But God said to me, 'You shall not build a house for my name, because you're a man of war and have shed blood.' Yet the Lord, the God of Israel, chose me from all the house of my father to be king over Israel forever. For he has chosen Judah to be a leader, and in the house of Judah, my father's house, and among the sons of my father, he took pleasure in me to make me king over all Israel. Of all of my sons, for the Lord has given me many sons, he has chosen my son Solomon to sit on the throne of the kingdom of the Lord of Israel. He said to me, 'Your son Solomon is the one who shall build my house and my courts, for I have chosen him to be a son to me, and I will be a father to him. I will establish his kingdom forever if he resolutely performs my commandments and my ordinances as is done now. So now in the sight of all Israel, the assembly of the Lord, and in the hearing of our God, observe and seek after all the commandments of the Lord your God, so that you may prosper and possess the good land and bequeath it to your sons forever.'" So in this section, David says, "I wanted to build the house for God." But he said, "No, can't do that, because you said you shed blood in war." And David reflects, he says, but he still picked me to be the king out of all of my brothers from all of the tribes of Israel. He allowed me to be king. And now he, God, has chosen my son Solomon. Out of all of my sons, God has chosen Solomon to be your next king and to build the house of the Lord. In our country, in America, leadership changes about every 4, sometimes 8 years. And in the eyes of the world, that's a very smooth operation. It doesn't seem like it if you listen to a lot of stuff, but in reality, if you think about leadership change in a nation this size and how smooth that transition takes place, I mean, they get together in January and they shake hands and you take over and I go somewhere else. And that's very powerful, because that was not the case back in the biblical times. And not for the nation that of God's people that David is now reigning over. Within a generation, we go from David to Solomon and then his sons. By that time, the nation is split. And that part that then becomes Judah as a nation will have 19 kings. Of those 19, 5 will be assassinated in that process of changing. 3 will be exiled. And so nearly half of the kings to follow after David will not experience a peaceful transition. But here in verse 5, David says, God has chosen Solomon to be your next king. You can go back in 1 Kings, first chapter, and you can read all of the drama that went on with the people involved. But it was still God who chose Solomon to be the next king. Even though he had a brother that presumed that he would be the king, and there were some other, you know, followers and supporters of him. But here David sets it straight. God has chosen Solomon to be your next king. And David has called together everybody that's going to be impacted by this change in those first few verses that we read. All of those different categories of people that are going to be impacted by this change, he makes sure that they hear it from him, that this is the way it needs to be. He explains why it will be good for the kingdom. I think there's a lesson there, and I don't want to belabor it, but I want to at least address it. For those of us in the church who would aspire to be leaders in God's kingdom today, I have been a Christian, and I just realized it putting this together, for over a half a century. When you put it that way, that sounds amazing. But I mean, you know, if you're 67 and depending on when you were baptized, that's not a lot of you. All right, some of us have been Christians for over a half a century. And during that time, there have been two things that I have seen that has disrupted the local congregation probably more than anything. And they're not doctrinal. They're not false teaching, stuff like that. They're the color of the carpet, the pews, those things in a building project. Not that we go and build temples all the time, but matters of the building project, and the change of leadership, particularly in elders and preacher. And it saddens me to look back and think of the damage that is done in local congregations when that is not done with the right heart, the right intent, and all that. And if you've been to other congregations in those many years of, you know what I'm talking about. I don't need to spell that all out of how elders might do things or how preachers might do things or whatever to make it really difficult for a peaceful transition. I pray that we will always try to do that here, and we've had tremendously good success with building projects here. And so that's a positive thing to say. Well done. Let's make sure that we continue to have the right heart. I'm out of time. All right. David sets forth an example for those of us who are going to be directly impacted by those who are going to be directly impacted by his departure, and explains to them that it's God's will for things to be that way. Encourage them to do what is right in the sight of God and with a good heart. And that's my point. May we always have that same aspiration to do the same. The second point that I wanted to talk about in David's farewell speech is his acknowledgement of God's fullness and man's emptiness. 29:14 through 16, just two verses quickly. But who am I, and who are my people, that we should be able to offer as generously as this? For all things come from you, and from your hand we have given you. For we are sojourners before you, and tenants as our fathers were. Our days on the earth are like a shadow, and there is no hope. O Lord, our God, all this abundance that we have provided to you, or to build you a house for your holy name. It is from your hand, and all is yours." I read that and couldn't help but reflect on the one lesson, particularly of last week on atonement, and how it is that we aspire to serve God and give back to God. But when you look at what God has given us, even salvation itself, how pitifully small or seemingly insignificant what we have to offer that might be. It's like a little boy who loves his father very much and decides that for Father's Day, he's going to go and he's going to break his piggy bank. He's going to take all of his allowance money out of the piggy bank and buy his father a Father's Day gift. And the question comes, does he realize that the allowance money that he is buying the gift for came from his father? David knows the heart of man, and he knows that it can become proud sometimes in its giving, even when the motive is good, and even when the giving is to God. So he wants his people to be humble in their generous giving. And if you read all of that that chapter consistently, I believe we come to that conclusion. In verse 16, he reminds everyone that it is from the hand of God that they are able to have anything to give back to God. And what a wonderful emancipation it is for us when we finally understand that all that stuff that Brother Mike talked about a couple of Sundays ago, all of that stuff that we have, it isn't even ours to start with. We wouldn't even have it were it not for God blessing us with it. The third point, verse 17 through 20, is David's prayer on behalf of the others. We'll read that, 29, 17 through 20. "Since I know, O my God, that you try the heart and delight in uprightness, I, in the integrity of my heart, have willingly offered all these things. So now with joy I have seen your people who are present here make their offering willingly to you. O Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, our father, preserve this forever in the intentions of the heart of your people and direct their heart to you. And give my son Solomon a perfect heart to keep your commandments, your testimonies, and your statutes, and to do them all, and to build the temple for which I have made provisions." Then David said to all the assembly, "Now bless the Lord your God," and all the assembly blessed the Lord and God of their fathers, and bowed low and did homage to the Lord and to the king. He says, look at them. They are so full of joy right now, and they want to worship you. They want to sacrifice for you. Preserve this moment in their heart. Because he knows right now they're hot for God. They're on fire for God. But he also knows that it is the nature of mankind for that to cool off. So he says, preserve this moment in their heart. Verse 18, they are happy to sacrifice for you. Help them to continue to seek you as they are at this moment. Verse 19, he specifically requests for Solomon to maintain a good heart and to desire to do God's will. And while you're at it, help him make sure he gets the temple built. You know, that was what David really wanted to do. And then read Okay, verse 20, we read how he closes it out. They all bless God. They humble themselves before him. You read on, continue. They do the sacrifices. Solomon is more legitimately crowned as king. He's asked him, he says, you know, Solomon's young. He's going to need help. And he has put everything in place. He has made the great provisions to help everything. It's interesting in that reading, we think that David designed the temple and he did not. God designed it. And if you read that, he turns over the blueprints. I thought about bringing a roll of blueprints. I could use those to walk with. But anyway, here's the blueprints. And they're exactly the way God instructed them to me. I've got them all written out, all of the details, everything you need. And I've got people that are going to provide assistance for you. And we've got all of the resources set aside. Everything is good to go. And David bows out as being king. There's a lot of interesting reading about the end of his life, but this, I think, holds a tremendous amount for us in his farewell speech to his nation, the kingdom for which God had put him in charge of. At this time, we're going to ask Brother Tommy to lead us in a closing prayer.